the 50th anniversary, so sometime in the second half of February.
So it's 18th of February is the date.
Yes,
started.
That's what we'll aim for.
That's a Sunday. But you'll decide whichever day.
Yeah, it may be the Friday beforehand or something like that.
But just let me know.
I'll try to, yes. We can't always be sure because we send these things to London and London decides when to broadcast them.
Yeah.
But we're now recording. Tell me, Bombay, February 1946. Okay.
We're okay.
Yeah, we'll wait for the subject while I pass by. Okay, we're now recording again. Bombay, February 1946. The mutiny had started. You were an eyewitness to it. What did you see? What was it like?
Well, I was a young lieutenant in February 1946. Lieutenant of the Royal Indian Naval Volunteer Reserve. And I was serving in the Directorate of Shipbuilding and Repairs in Bombay, situated on Feroz Shah Mehta Road. Now, this is a building, if you come from Mint Road side, which is now called Shaheed Bhagat Singh Marg, and you turn right, and the first building on the right is Botawala Building. That's where we had our office, and I was Assistant Secretary, Signals. And there was a certain amount of tension which was there, and on that particular day, 18th, I saw a number of sailors coming from Mint Road at that time, coming towards Feroz Shah Mehta Road, and they had three flags in their hands. They had the Congress flag, they had the Muslim League flag, and they had the Jai Hind flag. And the slogan they were shouting was Inqilab Zindabad and Jai Hind. And the one striking factor was there was no communal tension, they were from all the communities.
And this wasn't simply a protest, it was a mutiny.
It was a very much a mutiny, because in the armed forces you don't have a protest or you don't have a strike. You know, either it's a mutiny with violence or without violence. You cannot have a strike like you have in a union or in a firm. It's just not on.
You weren't only an eyewitness to the mutiny, you've been a researcher into its history. How extensive was it and what was the main cause behind it?
Well, I have done two books on naval history. The first one is Under Two Ensigns. That covers the period 1945 to 1950. In that, there is a 40-page chapter on the RIN mutiny. And I've interviewed various people, including sailors who mutinied, the ringleader, Dutt, and I've interviewed Philip Mason, who's still alive, who was the war secretary, and I've interviewed Meenu Masani, who seconded the adjournment motion in the Central Legislative Assembly at that time, and I've interviewed various other officers who have taken part, and I've recorded their views, and it is interesting at this stage, 50 years later, to see what one thinks about it these days. And there are various views expressed. There are the views is that there is no such thing, as I mentioned earlier, as a strike. It was a mutiny, as the mutiny commission which met after the mutiny, which was constituted by Field Marshal Sir Claude Auchinleck, and there were the three Indian judges, there was a British Admiral, and there was a Major General. And they have come to the firm conclusion that there is no such thing as a strike. It must be absolutely understood. It is a mutiny, even though there were some leaders of the mutineers who were inciting them and saying it was a strike. And I interviewed Mrs. Asif Ali herself, and when I kept on saying that, what have you got to say to this mutiny, she said, why do you keep on mentioning mutiny? It was a strike.
But how extensive was the mutiny? At its peak, how wide was it, and how many people?
I will tell you. You see, the scenario at that time in the winter of 1945-46 was a very surcharged one. The INA trials had taken place in November 1945, and there was a lot of tension, and India was in the, as Wavell described in a dispatch to London, India was in the birth pangs of a new order. And he said that the political parties are exploiting and encouraging the defense elements. There had been a certain amount of unrest and disaffection in the Air Force also, RAEF. And what had shattered people was that the Royal Indian Navy, which was the most imperial out of the three services, had mutinied. And that is why there's a lot more interest being shown now. with as to why this silent service, the smallest of three services and the most imperial one, which had the fewer number of Indians taken in than the other two services, and yet they mutinied. See, the reason why these people mutinied, because we had a class composition in the Navy. The educated sailors either came from Bengal or from the south. The seamen, the gunners, etc., came from the northwest, Punjab, frontier, etc. So they took charge of the WT system, the sailors, the communication sailors, and they sent messages to every single ship and establishment. And that's how it was a spontaneous and a collective manifestation of disaffection or strike or mutiny, whatever people like to call it. I say it was a mutiny. There's no question about it.
But its political importance, what was its political importance in the run-up to independence?
Well, political importance was that these sailors, some of them, thought that they were fighting for the freedom of the country, and they were perhaps convinced in their minds that this was one way of expressing, also getting their grievances addressed, and helping the cause of the freedom of the country. This is how they felt, some of them, because I interviewed Dutt, who was a leading mutineer, and he said that this is a time when the man in uniform must exult in the fire of the gun and bring independence to the country. This is how they felt. What percentage or what ingredient in it was there of nationalism and to get independence, combined with unaddressed grievances and no plans for resettlement, which was a very big problem. Mind you, we had about 1,500 naval personnel in 1939, and it increased to 25,000. From a very few ships, it increased to 300 ships, and we had no trained officers. They were just taken from all over the place. In fact, we had people from all different nationalities, and the RIN really at that time, as I mentioned in my book, was known not as the Royal Indian Navy, but the really incredible Navy.
It's been said that the mutiny hastened independence because it was the moment when Britain realised it couldn't rely on the Indian Armed Forces. Is that fair?
Well, that is Lieutenant S.N. Coley at that time. He was serving in HMIS Talwar, which was the centre of the mutineers, where they had first said, put slogans there, quit India, etc. And he was serving there. And he has said, written, to say that this mutiny made the British realize that they could not depend on the armed forces any longer. 100% they could not depend on it. And many other people felt that way. That and combined with what the political leaders were doing, I mean, some people thought that the political aspect was there.
You were in the Navy, but you were not a mutineer, you were an eyewitness. But looking back now, 50 years on, are you proud of the mutineers at all?
No.
Well, all right, let me ask the question. Let me ask the question again and invite you to give a longer answer and explain why. 50 years on, are you proud of the mutineers?
No, I am an old timer and I'm never proud of any indiscipline. Because in the 20s, when Thamaya was a young captain serving in Allahabad, and they used to have flag marches because the Nehru family was agitating at that time. So when he passed one day and he found Nehru's sisters throwing their foreign clothes all over the place and burning them, so he felt very upset about it, and he went to Motilal Nehru, which I have mentioned in one of my articles, and he said that we are just not doing anything for the cause, for the country. So the Motilal Nehru, and we want to leave, we want to join you. He says, don't, because that will be the worst thing you do. We will very soon be independent, and we want a disciplined defense force, because we will need you when we stand alone. And same thing, when Prem Bhagat, who was the first Victoria Cross winner in World War II, he went to Mahatma Gandhi's Aga Khan Palace, which I've also written about. They said, what can we do? Mahatma Gandhi said, stay on, we'll need you. You've chosen a profession, I wouldn't like you to leave it.
Thank you very much. Okay, we've finished. Gather all of this. Tell me what you saw in February 46. How did you realize that the mutiny had broken out?
Well, I was Assistant Secretary Signals, dealing with all the signals that were coming, and there was a certain amount of tension in the air. We knew certain things were happening, and I knew in the signal communication establishment, HMIS Talwar, it is His Majesty's Indian Ship Talwar, which is situated at Colaba in Bombay. And earlier on, some sailors had gone on what they call a strike, a hunger strike, because the food was bad, there were stones in the rice and various other things, and there was a certain amount of bad words used by the British officers, which was very much resented, which I quoted to say that, for example, one sailor went up to an officer and said, sir, if you call me a black bastard, you get away with it. But if I call you a white bastard, will I be able to get away with it? He said that. That's quoted in my book also. And this is the view of Lieutenant Commander Shaw, a British officer, who is the president of the, I think, the Royal Indian Naval Association in UK. And a very fine officer. We still correspond. I mean, he felt that the management and the relationship between officers and sailors, their requests, their grievances, etc., were not being given the due weightage. If the management had been proper, perhaps this whole thing could have been avoided even, or minimized to a small extent. It could have been controlled. With Upper Lord, and I'll tell you a very important thing, Admiral Godfrey, John Godfrey, he was our flag officer commanding Royal Indian Navy, and he broadcasted on the All India Radio and said, with the massive force we've got at our command, I would not even mind destroying the Navy. He said that in his broadcast. Now, that was a very intemperate statement to make. And Godfrey suffered for it, because in the Royal Navy and in the British system, everybody who becomes a vice admiral or a lieutenant general gets knighted. Godfrey was not knighted.
What did you see yourself of the mutiny?
Well, apart from the sailors marching,
tell me about the sailors marching.
Well, sailors were coming from Mint Road, at the junction at the corner of the building, which now is Grindlay's Bank. You turning left, and there were shots being fired from all over the place. I heard those shots. I was on the second floor of Botawala building. And then there was curfew. I couldn't come down. But later on, I did come down, and I went towards Ballard Pier side, and I saw some ships. I think the British ships were on their way to, implement what Godfrey had said. Maybe if the ships had to be, the Indian ships had to be controlled or disarmed or, the mutineers taken hold of. I mean, the British ships were coming in. I could see some ships. But one other thing which I will tell you, which I think you may be interested to know, there's only one ship which did not mutiny. This ship was commanded by Lieutenant Krishnan, who was a Distinguished Service Cross holder of World War II. We only had three DSCs in World War II. Krishnan was a very gallant officer, a lieutenant. So he engineered a fake signal to say that an aircraft had ditched at sea and told the sailors, we cannot get into the harbor, we must go out to save this aircraft and life. The aircraft had been ditched. Now, the sailors realized that he was doing something which is not right. They couldn't join their compatriots here, but they all went. When they came back into the harbor, the mutiny was over. So when they were coming back into the harbor, there was a young sub-lieutenant R.K.S. Gandhi, who later became the flag lieutenant to Mountbatten, later became a vice admiral, governor of Himachal Pradesh, and now member of the Mutinies Commission. Member of the Minorities Commission. He's still there. He's coming on Monday. And he went up to the bridge and told Krishnan, he said, sir, now is the time we must bombard the Royal Bombay Yacht Club. So Krishnan said, why? He said, because they never allowed Indians to come in there. So Krishnan said, all right, I've heard you, sub. Go on the bridge and keep watch. Second time he again suggested. He said, all right, I've heard it. Stop it now. So that feeling was also there, because he's a very what shall I say, anglicized Indian officer, very gallant, very bold, and he's held the top appointments, and he couldn't become a member of the Royal Yacht Club. And so he was very upset about it, and he wanted to bombard it quite seriously.
The march you saw, the protest by the mutineers, what flags were they holding? What were they shouting?
They were shouting Inqilab Zindabad, which is Long Live Revolution. And they were shouting Jai Hind. And they had these three flags. They had the Congress flag, the Muslim League flag, and the Jai Hind flag. Now the Russians have tried to say that they had the Communist flag, which they didn't, because I saw it myself. And the Russians put out in one of their papers when it was USSR that this is a Russian flag, it was not there. And there were shots being fired. And in the evening I came out and I saw some troops there, just outside the Reserve Bank building, because opposite that was the Castle Barracks, where the lot of sailors were, shall we say, holed up there. And so they were there, and there were troops there. There were British troops, and there were Indian troops also. But I couldn't see much of them, because since I was in uniform, that's why I took the advantage of going this side and that side. I went towards HMIS Talwar also. The sailors were being rounded up after the mutiny was over and taken to a camp at Mulund. And there were two officers who were in charge of that. One was Karmarkar. At that time, I think he was a lieutenant. And the other was Nanda, also a lieutenant, who later became Chief of Naval Staff. And they were herding them to a camp where they were to be interrogated and held until they were brought to trial for court-martial or whatever, punishment which the service wanted to give them. And they were very unpopular with the sailors, because this mutineer who's written a book, Mutiny of the Innocents, he has mentioned about these people.
Do you think the mutiny hastened independence?
It contributed in a small way, yes. Because the British had come to realize, and this is very clear from various dispatches also, and in the Transfer of Power volumes, which I have read, and which are priceless documents and lovely dispatches, very well researched, and it stated there that by Wavell and by other people, that India was seething with a certain amount of discontent against British rule, and everybody knew independence was coming. How soon? Because no one could forecast, because no one was at Nostradamus. But everybody knew it was coming. The INA trials had taken place. They were sentenced to death, I think, and yet that sentence was remitted. And I was in Bombay in November 1945. It was the trial of the INA, and Sir N.P. Engineer was the Advocate General, and he was a naval officer's father-in-law. So
in what way did the mutiny hasten independence? You say you think it did contribute. In what way?
Well, the British, I think, in a pragmatic people as they are, they had come to realize and appreciate that they couldn't 100% rely on the armed forces. They will not be able to rely on the armed forces. I also got that feeling. And after all, what is the sense if you don't do some forward thinking? You can't wish things away. Things come. You can't, it's happening all over India also. You can't wish certain things away. And they will have to come.
You were present on the 15th of August 1947.
That's right.
Tell me about that occasion.
Well, I was present in two places. Just outside South Block, I'd come down and I saw Louis Mountbatten's in a carriage with Lady Mountbatten, naval uniform, very, very handsome looking naval officer. I felt proud of his naval uniform, like I was. And I watched, and people were hilarious. I mean, they were shouting slogans, and I well remember one of the slogans was Pandit Mountbatten Ki Jai.
Which means
long live Pandit Mountbatten, or victory to Pandit Mountbatten. Jai means victory. They shouted that, and Mountbatten was waving, and Lady Mountbatten there. Then I went to this Prince's Place, you know, where all these Maharajas have got their palaces, where Gandhi's statue was, and all the palaces of the Maharajas, that's where the flag was hoisted first time. And the time fixed was the Mountbatten's carriage couldn't arrive in time. Some women fainted in the way also. So, and the time had come, the three ADCs to Mountbatten were there. I was, of course, only an onlooker. I was not there. I'd taken over as the staff officer to the first Indian Naval Chief, Admiral Sir J.T.S. Hall. No, he wasn't a knight, Admiral, Rear Admiral J.T.S. Hall. But I went to see, and Mountbatten was signaling to them, and they couldn't come in time, and they hoisted the flag, and the people rushed along with these people, these three flag lieutenants. There were Lieutenant R.K.S. Gandhi, there was a Flight Lieutenant Neku Prakash, he's somewhere in America now, and I think there was a Army, Kim Yadav, I think he was a Lieutenant or Captain Kim Yadav. They were the three ADCs to Mountbatten. They, along with the people who were pushing them, they actually hoisted the first flag. And that is mentioned in my article in the Asian Age on 15th of August. And there was a rainbow at that time, and people said this is a very auspicious sign for India's independence. I saw it myself.
You're a Sikh. Your community suffered very grievously in the immediate run-up to partition and independence.
At that time, my parents were in Lahore, and they came away with nothing. Even their lunch tiffin carrier was taken away at the Ferozpur border. They came with nothing.
How did they travel?
They came by truck, and then they walked part of the way.
On 14th of August, 15th of August, what was your overriding emotion? Was it joy at independence or sadness that it had been accompanied by partition?
Both. I was very happy that we had become independent. I was very unhappy and suffering because my parents were not. I didn't know whether they were safe or not. When they arrived, I was here at Mundi House. We had officers' quarters there. And that's where they were billeted. And it was a very, very sad thing. And in fact, the biggest sufferers were the Sikhs in 1947, as they have been in 84.
Were you born in Lahore?
Oh, very much so. I was born in Lahore in 1920, 23rd May 1920. And I schooled in Lahore, the cathedrals. First I went to Sacred Heart Convent, it's a Roman Catholic school. Then I went to Cathedral School, which is a Protestant school. And then I went to Foreman Christian College, which is an American Presbyterian college.
Have you been back to Lahore since?
No, I wish I could. I think there was no city like Lahore. Beautiful city in every possible way. In fact, people used to go from Delhi to buy shoes in Lahore.
So you feel very proud of the city where you were born?
Yeah, absolutely, I still feel very proud of it.
But you haven't seen it for
50
years?
No, no. I've had attended farewell functions of the Pakistan Naval Advisor. I've attended their National Day functions in March. And I've talked to them. And it was a great nostalgic pleasure to talk to them in very crude Punjabi, which Punjabi is a very crude language. And the Punjabi abuse is the best one. The invectives and Punjabi abuse are the best ones. And it was great to talk to them in the same language, same abuses.
How did you feel back in 47 when the armed forces were being divided up? And presumably quite a few of your colleagues.
Yeah, very sad. Very sad.
How did it happen? How did it work? And who decided? You're Indian, you're Pakistani?
No, I was, as I told you, in the decision to partition India had been taken, so the assets had to be divided. And the assets were the equipment, the personnel, and that was a partition subcommittee, and they had their Army subcommittee, Naval subcommittee, the Air Force subcommittee. And I was working with Admiral Sir Geoffrey Miles. I was used to work late till about 8 o'clock after Admiral Miles used to come from the meetings of these partition subcommittees. The two Indian officers we had was naval officers, Admiral Soman, who later became chief, and Admiral Dayashankar, who died. He was also a very gallant officer, a Distinguished Service Cross awardee. He died 3 years ago.
But some of your colleagues who you'd learned your trade with, in a sense, opted for Pakistan.
Oh, yes. You see, there was a set thing. If you were born that side, and you were a Hindu or a Sikh, then you could opt for that side also. If you're a Muslim, no. If you are a Muslim, this side, you could opt for that side and this side. So if you were a Hindu or a Sikh this side, then you couldn't opt for Pakistan. I wouldn't have opted for Pakistan in any case.
But you could have done.
No, I could have done. I think so I could have done. I'm not sure. But I wouldn't have opted for Pakistan because I saw a lot of cruelties. I heard about it when the people came in trains and they were butchered, and both sides did it. And I mentioned it in my last article when I quoted from Maulana Azad's book that the massive obscenities of 1947, over 500,000 people were killed. No one knows the exact number even now.
But isn't it curious then that in those three wars that India and Pakistan have fought, mm-hmm. people who trained and served together mm-hmm. are fighting each other?
Yeah, I agree with you, but now it has become a sustaining factor for our political leaders to be hostile to each other. Because unless you issue a statement to say that Pakistan is going to invade us, or they issue a statement that India is going to deploy the Prithvi or the Agni, and they're going to invade us, they don't get any strength. They have to do these things, which is unfortunate, very unfortunate, not unfortunate, but tragic. In fact, the worst thing that has happened in this subcontinent, that it was partitioned. And Maulana Azad was the last man, he was the only man right till the end, and Mahatma Gandhi, and he had to also give in on partition. Maulana Azad said no, and he told the Muslims that the ethnic differences will be far more difficult to get over than the religious differences. And that's what the Muslims are facing. You see in Karachi, Mahajir Qaumi movement, what is happening to them? They don't talk the same language. I feel closer to a Punjabi Muslim from West Punjab than, a Mahajir Qaumi man in Karachi would feel to a man in Lahore, a Punjabi Muslim. There's no doubt about it. We speak the same language. They don't speak the same language. They speak Urdu. I speak Punjabi. Punjabi Muslim man speaks Punjabi. He abuses in the same way as I would like to abuse somebody. But the man in Karachi, the refugees, Muhajirs as they call them, they don't speak the same language. In fact, the Sindhis, as this J.M. Saeed, who died very recently, he said that we are Muslims since the last 1400 years. We were Pakistani since the last 45 years. But before that, we were Sindhis. Our Raja was a man called Sen.